Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Well, it's been another whale of a week, hasn't it? And we haven't done a whole lot of news of the day, but I've got several stories here I want to talk about today. And then I put a little word out there earlier today on Facebook. And every once in a while, I'm a movie buff. Some of you know that. And I just love movies. And I always kind of watch movies through, and even some TV stuff that I watch with my wife. I tend to watch everything through a biblical lens. And interestingly enough, I don't know if this is something like wrong with me or if I'm just exceedingly corny, but I can get moved to tears easily watching a movie because I generally think it when I see turnaround stories or salvation stories or things, and most movies don't even know they're doing it, obviously, but I see that stuff and it's just emotionally powerful to me. And it's pretty much my besides going to sleep, it's one of the few things I do where I completely shut down. I'm not doing show prep. I'm not talking with anybody. I'm not meeting with anybody. And so, you know, I think most of us have a little cave somewhere, a little something you do to kind of disappear for a little while. And for me, it's going to a movie. And so I do that, and I put it out on Facebook earlier today. Should I do on Fridays? Should I include a movie review? So I'm going to start doing that regularly on Fridays. And again, I think they're a fascinating tool to use as you craft your own and kind of sharpen your own biblical worldview. But also, the culture is talking about things, and where the culture is, if we want to be a representative for Christ, we need to be there too, and we need to be able to have those conversations. We need to be conversant in what the culture is looking at and what the culture is talking about. And when we don't, I think that cuts off one of the trails that we would have to be able to get to a gospel conversation. So I'll get to that in the last segment of the show, and that movie review will be on First Man, which was kind of controversial, right, when this first broke probably about a month or 6 weeks ago, and everybody went ballistic because we're good little patriots, everybody went ballistic because they did not show the planting of the American flag. And if you don't show the planting of American flag, then what possible good could come of that movie? It's like nothing good comes out of Nazareth, right? So if you don't show the American flag being planted, and with some of their interviews before, and Ryan Gosling, who's probably liberal, who's the star of the movie, playing Neil Armstrong, if you don't show that, and then, you know, that's a problem. And then some of those answers, well, we didn't want it to be, you know, we didn't want it to be an American achievement. We wanted it to be a human achievement. Okay, well, you know, that sounds nice, I suppose, from a certain perspective, namely a liberal one or a worldly one, but it was a uniquely American achievement, without a doubt, and Kennedy kind of got the ball rolling, and that was all because of our race with Russia on every front imaginable, and Russia was kicking our tail ends in the space race, and so let's get going, and that gave the Gemini missions, the Apollo missions going to the moon. That was all about American exceptionalism, whether Ryan Gosling wants to admit it or not, or the people that made this movie, but I tell you what, that was such an overblown reaction that, oh, they didn't show the planting of the American flag. They do show the American flag that was planted, and the American flag shows up in plenty of other places. It's a uniquely American story. And there's some really neat things there. There are a couple warnings about content that I'll get to. But I found it to be a fascinating experience, a fascinating movie. And it really, it's as much about Neil Armstrong, who is an interesting character, as it was about the actual accomplishment. So I'll get to that in the fourth quarter of the show today. But wanted to talk about a few other things going on in the news. And a couple things that you probably have not heard at all. But one of the big things that's going on, literally going on right now, is this big, massive group of migrants. And there's got to be, how do you move 400, then 1,000, then 2,000, then 4,000 people? How do you move them from Honduras into Mexico and then all the way up Mexico heading north to the American border unless somebody is helping to fund that? How do these people get fed? There's got to be money going in there. And who's funding it? I don't know, George Soros. I'm sure there's some funding going in there. But this is an interesting situation. Obviously, the timing is not coincidental. They hope to be at the border by November 6th. Well, gosh, Steve, why does November 6th matter? Why that date? Well, that's the midterm election. And so that's the gamble. I think it's you've got some people going, we need to kind of erase the Kavanaugh thing. And we need to go back to what was really playing well, especially in the center and to the left, which was Donald Trump separating families and destroying families and putting two-year-olds in jail and stuff like that. All that kind of talk. And so that's what they're setting up. They're having a little problem in Mexico, but they've crossed in. That's Tapachula, Mexico. This has just happened earlier today. A chaotic scene unfolded as a massive caravan of Honduran migrants reached the Guatemala-Mexico border Friday. They broke through a steel fence that had been padlocked shut. Mexican police in riot gear pushed them back, setting off smoke canisters. This is from a CNN story. I'm using a CNN story. I'm an equal opportunity offender. So thousands of migrants are waiting to cross. According to CNN teams at the scene, at least a dozen migrants stuck on the bridge have jumped into the river below. So chaos, which really is the word of the day, and I would say is the word of the age, chaos. We saw it at the Kavanaugh hearings. We saw it back when Trump was elected. We saw it during the inauguration. We've seen it during the Women's March. We've seen chaos. And chaos is the exact opposite of godliness. Godliness brings order and specificity. Chaos is the work of the devil. Throwing things into chaos is the work of the devil. Confusion is the work of the devil and the flesh and the world. And so, you know, just remember, it's helpful to have an eschatology, whether you're premillennial, amillennial, postmillennial, pre-trib, mid-trib, wherever you're at with your eschatology, your end times beliefs and theology. There is a day coming when Jesus is coming back. And prior to that, it's going to get nutty. And one of the big things that continues to increase is chaos. Not just human chaos, but worldly chaos. As the world itself groans, as in birth pangs, right? If you study the scriptures. Which will get me to another story about, this was Ligonier Ministries, which was R.C. Sproul, did something with Lifeway Research. Did a big survey, 3,000 Americans who would consider themselves to be evangelicals, but what do they actually believe? How solid is their theology? So when you see this story, and then you look at the chaos, not just in what's going on and coming to the border, and then what's going to happen as a result of that as we go into November 6th, but what we see with the Kavanaugh hearing and what we see all the way back to Trump's inauguration and the Women's March stuff, just total chaos. But you're going to understand that a little bit more when I take you through this study to see what evangelicals, percentages of evangelicals whose theology is whack. It's just whack. It's just, it's unbelievable ignorance. And if it's that, if that's happening inside the church, you can bet, take that tenfold, a hundredfold, a thousandfold out in the culture. That's exactly what we're seeing, is a world gone wild. And what do you expect? This is Steve Noble on the Steve Noble Show. We'll be right back. 'Cause you are more than I could ever dream. Ladies and gentlemen, Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi. Let that one sink in. Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi. Can you imagine that? And that's one of the reasons why we're even talking about this big, giant caravan, about 4,000 people now. Just crossed the border from Honduras into Mexico. Headed where? Headed where, Steve? Well, they're headed here. They're headed to the Texas border. They're going to be coming up through Mexico. And they hope to arrive by what date? By November 6th. And why does that matter? Because that's the midterm election, Tuesday, November 6th. So hoping to that to be kind of an October-November surprise. And we'll see what happens. I want to talk about that. But what's coming up? Who knows what's going to happen in the next 3 weeks? The polls don't look good. But the polls didn't look good for Donald Trump, did they? And yet here we have the President of the United States, Mr. Donald J. Trump himself. So I don't necessarily believe the polls. I think what I've learned about the Senate, the Republicans will probably hold the Senate 75-80%. By most numbers, that they're likely to hold it. It doesn't look good in the House at all. So we'll see what happens, because today is Friday, October 19th. But we've got 3 weeks before we get to know to Tuesday, November 6th. And this kind of stuff going on, like this caravan coming up from the borders, bringing up the border issue, which I think is better for Trump than not. Now, what they're hoping to do is get up there to the border, and I'm sure the organizers, the funders are hoping that they start splitting up families, and so they got to hurry. They got to, you know, pick up the pace, pray for good weather, pick up the pace so you can get up there and get your family split up to hopefully help the Democrats, which I'm sure it's in some way, whether it's George Soros or whatever, are involved somewhere. Because how do you move 4,000 people that far up through Honduras, all the way up through Mexico? Look at Mexico, north to south. It's not small. And so they crossed over today. They're trying to. and then up through Mexico. And Donald Trump's putting pressure on Mexico and these other countries, and we'll see what happens. But he actually has a lot of constitutional authority to do so. But I still want to come back to, and I put a picture up on Facebook earlier today, of Nancy Pelosi, because I want that to, you know, make you sick, literally. And so that's just something that's out there that Nancy Pelosi would most likely, not definitely, but most likely be the new Speaker of the House of Representatives in the Congress. And if you're got a problem with that, and I would hope you would, that you need to seriously consider not just praying over this election, but actually voting. So here's the pathetic numbers. These numbers are pretty strong and have been around for consistent for the last 5, 6, 7 years. When it comes to Christians, self-professed Christians in America, 50% don't even bother to register. They're not even registered. I can guarantee you, but nearly 100% of them complain, but only 50% are registered. About 25% vote in a presidential election. That was 2 years ago. Only 12% vote in an off-year election. That's now. 12%, which means 88% of people that call themselves Christians don't even bother to vote in an off-year election, which is 3 weeks from now. And then a primary like we passed earlier in the year, and that happens every 2 years, primaries, only about 5%. Only about 5% of people that call themselves Christians vote, which is also pathetic. But there is a lot of there's a lot of pressure that Donald Trump can use as the president of the United States, not because he's Donald Trump, but because of the United States Constitution. There's some ability there, executive authority. So this is from an article by Daniel Horowitz, who's a great writer for Conservative Review, and he doesn't usually do anything that's positive for Trump. He's pretty negative on Trump, just fine, whatever. That's not my point. But here's some things that he put in here. Constitutionally, this is true. While Congress controls immigration, once immigrants are legally admitted to our country and can also exclude anyone from admission, the president shares concurrent jurisdictions on exclusions. He can't deport anyone he wants to without an authorizing statute, but he can exclude anyone up front, which is super important to know. As the Supreme Court said in a landmark 1950s case, the exclusion of aliens is a fundamental act of sovereignty. The right to do so stems not alone from legislative power, that's Congress, but it is inherent in the executive power to control the foreign affairs of the nation. And so where do you get some checks and balances on foreign affairs? Well, the president can't make a treaty with anybody unless it goes through the Senate. Okay, so that's the checks and balances on that. Trump can simply shut the door and demand that any legitimate asylum claims be processed through our 10 or so consulates in Mexico. And don't you know that they would love that? So build the wall all you want. They're not coming across where you don't have a wall, where you have weak literal physical separation. They're coming to points of entry. And because of our catch and release stuff, those points of entry are the problem. And you can literally, Donald Trump constitutionally has the authority to shut them down. The question is, does Donald Trump have the backbone? Most of the time he does. But would he do that before the November 6th election? So yeah, I don't think he would. Because, listen, if this is going to be crazy if the Democrats take over the House and you have Speaker Nancy Pelosi, which, sorry to drop that on you right before the beginning of the weekend, but Speaker Nancy Pelosi, things are going to get crazy. And then you're going to see just how far Donald Trump is willing to compromise with liberals on legislation. But it still has to get through the Senate. But in the House, do you know, let me just ask you this, friend, do you know how many votes are required? What percentage is required in the House to bring about articles of impeachment? Which we know they want to do that with Trump. And then based on things that several Democrat senators and members of the House and leaders have said, they would love to do that to Brett Kavanaugh. What percentage do they need in the House to bring articles of impeachment? Just think back to Bill Clinton when Newt Gingrich was there. And what did they need? Did they need a supermajority? They did not. They need a simple majority, 51%. And if the polls are right, which I don't think we can trust those anymore, maybe to a certain extent, but if the polls are right, they're easily going to have 51%. So they can impeach anybody they want. Then it goes to the Senate, and then the Senate does the trial. They have to. They do the trial, and then you have to have a supermajority to convict. A supermajority in the Senate is 66 votes, which they can't get. But we could very well spend the majority of the next 2 years with an impeachment proceeding with Donald Trump and Brett Kavanaugh. That's what's on the line. That's what we're talking about. So what Donald Trump does with this caravan coming up from the South is going to be important. Here's another thing, some more delegated authority from Congress. These are two different laws. INA 212 allows the president, whenever he finds that the entry of any aliens or of any class of aliens into the United States would be detrimental to the interests of the United States, to suspend all forms of immigration for such period as he shall deem necessary. Now, here's an example. I'm Mr. Constitutional today, right? Here's an example of the problem with the judicial branch. Now you can have some federal judge in Hawaii strike down Donald Trump's executive order to shut down immigration for a short period of time from seven of the most prolific terrorist-producing nations on the planet. And a federal judge in Hawaii or Maine or Washington can say, oh, no, no, that's unconstitutional. And all of a sudden, the court system will slap that on the president and shut him down. Now, how do they enforce that? They can't, right? So there's some tension there. Here's the other law. INA 215 grants the president an almost equal level of authority to subject entry of all aliens entering or departing to such reasonable rules, regulations, and orders, and subject them to such limitations and exceptions as the president may prescribe. If demanding that all immigrants enter legally or apply for asylum in a safe and controlled environment at a consulate rather than at a border controlled by some of the most dangerous people in the world is not a reasonable rule, I'm not sure what is, writes Daniel Horowitz. So he's got some constitutional authority if he's willing to exercise it with this giant group of people. 4,000 right now, it's going to grow as they come up, trying to get here before November 6th, which is the election. A huge mess. So when we come back, I want to talk about this a rather eye-opening study that Ligonier Ministries partnered with Lifeway Research to talk to evangelical Christians in America to check their theology. Breaking news that could have an impact on Roe versus Wade, Alabama. This just happened today. And then I want to read the story of a mom who decided to induce because she miscarried at 12 weeks because they wanted to hold that baby. 12 weeks. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. TheSteveNobleShow.com, by the way, is the website where we have all the podcasts, and you can get some information there. And then all the other stations that we're on and listening live if you want to stream it live. Or you can join us on Facebook because we do Facebook Live just about each day. Weekdays we're on from 4 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Not everywhere we're on plays it live, but the majority of them do. And then pretty soon in the next week or two, we're going live in we're already live in Salt Lake in San Francisco, which is cool. So we oftentimes people are like, oh, there's no Christians in San Francisco. Yeah, there are. And KDIA, a great station out there that we're on. And so we're excited to be on in San Francisco. But within a couple of weeks on the Truth Radio Network, we're going to be live in Salt Lake City. There's a higher percentage of Christians in Jordan than there are in Salt Lake or in Utah. So excited to be on there, Truth Radio Network affiliate there in Salt Lake City. And then we're also adding Richmond, Virginia, which will be a tape delay in the evening. But we'll be on there, too. So a couple more states that God is adding. We'll be up to 14 states at that point. So that's exciting. And we praise the Lord for that and just try to be good stewards of this time that he's given us. A lot of you are a part of that and support the ministry financially because this is Christian radio, not secular radio. So almost all the time we buy the airtime. And it's not the cheapest thing on the planet. So we do that because we believe in this mission and believe in speaking the truth and believe in speaking God's truth into the issues of the day. But it would be helpful, golly, it would be helpful if Christians actually had decent theology. So this is a story. This was out of Christianity Today, and this was a kind of a partnership between Ligonier Ministries and Lifeway Research. So they conducted it, interviews with 3,000 Americans and people that they would consider themselves, or if they answered a couple of questions, you consider them basically evangelicals, okay? So Jesus is the only way, the Bible's mostly true. You say mostly, yeah, that's problematic, right? So here's some things. More than two-thirds of the people polled disagree that the smallest sin deserves eternal damnation. Only 58% strongly disagree. So that's kind of alarming. No, only the really bad sins should get you eternal damnation. So what do the lesser sins get you? What? Purgatory? Terrible theology. A majority of U.S. adults, 58%, the ones that they surveyed, said that worshiping alone or with one's family is a valid replacement for regularly attending church. Only 30% disagree with that. Now, if you're worshiping alone, that's one issue. If you're worshiping with other people in your family and maybe another family in a house church, I don't have an issue with that. But it's interesting. Here, this gets more juicy. A majority of U.S. adults surveyed say that the Holy Spirit is a force, not a personal being. 59%. It's a force, like Luke Skywalker, not a personal being. When it comes to Americans with evangelical beliefs, most people are basically good. 52% believe that. So you see some problems here with holiness and understanding God's holiness versus our sin. So 52% people that would call themselves evangelicals say that most people are basically good. When they're comparing them to what? Hitler, of course. God accepts the worship of all religions. 51% of 3,000 evangelicals polled said God accepts the worship of all religions. Jesus was the first and greatest being created by God the Father. 78% don't even know that Jesus is part of the Trinity and eternally existent. Not created, eternally existent. All three. Father, Son, Holy Spirit. Hello. But 78% believe that Jesus was the first and greatest being created by God the Father, which would make them really, you might be a decent Mormon if you think that. But you're not. Biblical Christianity, wow. So you've got all these problems there. And it went on. On social issues, the 2018 edition of this study finds that more Americans agree than disagree that the Bible's condemnation of homosexual behavior doesn't apply anymore. How convenient. On abortion, it found that a slim majority of Americans believe that the procedure is a sin, 52% versus 38%. And there were some hot spots, actually, some bright spots with millennials in some areas, and in other areas it was a problem. Like they said, more millennials are also now viewing God as unconcerned with my day-to-day decisions, which is convenient. That's kind of like, well, he's not concerned with what I'm doing day-to-day, so why should I worry about it, right? So there's obviously, this is at the end of the article, the state of theology of the theology survey highlights the urgent need for courageous ministry that faithfully teaches the historic Christian faith. It's never been popular to talk about mankind's sinfulness or the exclusive claims of Christ Jesus. So I would just say to you, make sure if you're doing your homework, make sure you're studying to show yourself approved. And then don't just assume because your kids go to youth group twice a week that they're learning. Because in a lot of places, they're being entertained. They might have some fun, but are they really learning theology? So be aware of that. Here's some breaking news. This just happened today. Alabama top court judge urges Supreme Court to overturn Roe versus Wade. So this just happened today. The Alabama Supreme Court unanimously ruled the case of Jesse Phillips versus the state of Alabama that the value of life of an unborn child is no less than the value of the lives of other persons. In a concurring opinion, Justice Parker boldly called on the Supreme Court to overturn Roe v. Wade. I urge the Supreme Court, this is a direct quote, of the United States to reconsider the Roe exception and to overrule this constitutional aberration. Return the power to the states to fully protect the most vulnerable among us. So the case came before the Alabama Supreme Court. This guy, Jesse Phillips, a man convicted of murdering his wife and their preborn child, appealed his conviction, arguing that he shouldn't receive the death penalty because his 6 to 8 week preborn child should not be considered a person under Alabama law. The Alabama legislature expressly enacted the Brody Act 12 years ago to protect preborn babies. Under the Brody Act, the definition of a person includes an unborn child in utero at any stage of development, regardless of viability, which is what we should be thinking nationally with respect to Roe versus Wade, by the way. The national significance of this case cannot be understated since the question of personhood has been the linchpin to the so-called right to abortion ever since Justice Blackmun erroneously wrote in Roe v. Wade that children in the womb are not persons and therefore not entitled to any of the fundamental constitutional protections. That's back in 1973, Roe v. Wade. Responding directly to Roe's flawed ruling, the Alabama Supreme Court unanimously ruled that unborn children are persons entitled to the full and equal protection of the law, and they use that line specifically because full and equal protection is part of the 14th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. That's why they used it, because they want it to go to the Supreme Court. Which is why people went absolutely ballistic and chaos theory was the rule of the day with Kavanaugh. Because if a case like this could get up there, the guy would have to appeal it and then would have to move up to the federal court system and the appeals court and keep appealing and try to get to the Supreme Court. Probably won't happen in this case, but this is the type, when you're reading these concurring opinions and the majority opinion on cases like this, look for that kind of constitutional language because there's people out there that understand, forget your personal view. Constitutionally speaking, Roe versus Wade was pathetic. So that happened in Alabama. Praise the Lord for that. Keep praying. There's great movement there. Okay, this story, and then in the last segment of the show, I'll get to First Man, which is about Neil Armstrong and Apollo 11. But this was, I just shared this on Facebook Live. I shared it a couple times earlier on Facebook. This is an important story to consider with respect to life again. And if you haven't seen Gosnell yet, by the way, go see it. That's how we vote in America. In that world, in the media world, is with tickets. Gosnell was like made it into the top 10 by Monday this week of nationwide movies. So that's awesome. But you got to get out there and see it and support it. And you need to learn from it. You need to be convicted by it. And it needs to keep that fire burning in your belly for life. So this is from LifeSite News. By 17 weeks, everyone knew. So this is written by Cecilia and Daryl Everett. Okay. And they just shared this in kind of a poetic fashion. I won't be able to finish it in this segment, but I'll finish it in the second and the next segment. Then we'll talk about, we'll do the movie review. By 17 weeks, everyone knew we were having a baby. Family and friends had delighted in our news. We were so in love with our little baby, I wasn't alone. My midwife couldn't find the heartbeat at my routine checkup. What followed were the longest 2 hours of my life. But thanks to friends and family praying for me, I wasn't alone. My husband met me for the ultrasound. I felt sick. Not the pregnancy kind of sick that I had felt daily for so many weeks of the pregnancy. That other kind of sick. That kind where your heart and your brain keep smashing into each other until they both feel numb. There he was on the screen, perfectly formed, but no heartbeat. Measuring 12 weeks. What were your dates again? Then it hit me, hard. For 6 weeks, I had been carrying a dead child. I had waited weeks for kicks. Now I knew why they hadn't come. But he was mine, resting inside. And I wasn't alone. My husband and I looked at each other. I remember feeling sorry for the ultrasound technicians as they awkwardly mumbled sweet words, handed us Kleenex, and left. We cried together. How could we tell our other children? Was I even capable of holding their grief so overwhelmed by my own? They knew the moment we walked in the door. We sat down in a huddle of love and tears, but I wasn't alone. His story goes on. It got complicated. After nearly 6 weeks, my missed miscarriage likely required an induction or a DNC. The age of my baby meant that the doctors at the nearest hospital wanted me to come in and have the DNC. My emotional needs after going through nearly half the pregnancy meant I wanted the chance to hold my child. No matter how small, I had seen his image on that screen. His arms, his legs. I wanted to kiss him, to delight in him. I fought for an induction with the help and support of some amazing friends and family and a midwife who knew what I needed and was ready to fight with me. Once again, I wasn't alone. And so, 3 days later, I got into a different hospital. The drug to induce my labor was the abortion pill. So then what happens next? And the pictures of what happens next I shared on Facebook. But I'll finish that story because it's powerful and it has something to do with the Alabama thing. It has something to do with Kavanaugh. It has something to do with Trump. It has something to do with this nation, because it's all about life. Then after that, after we finish that, super powerful. Again, I shared it on Facebook. Just go to the Facebook page, The Steve Noble Show. Then after that, we'll do our review of First Man about Neil Armstrong. This is Steve Noble.
Well, I got a message. I got a song. Can I get a witness? Tell me what's going on.
Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, The Steve Noble Show. Great to be with you. And I was about halfway through, this is a story on LifeSite News written by Cecilia and Daryl Everett, who were they were parents already and they were pregnant and they miscarried at 12 weeks, but didn't know till about 6 weeks after that. So they had a perfectly formed 12-week-old baby in her womb, and she was kind of writing this story a little bit in a kind of a poetic way. But it was I put the links up on Facebook, so you can go check it out there at the Facebook page, The Steve Noble Show, and go see it for yourself. And this is, these aren't like brutal abortion kind of pictures because this baby was induced and basically stillborn, but dead already. But they wanted to see their baby boy, who they named John Mercy. And so I was about halfway through when they made this decision for induction because they a DNC, you know, they're probably going to a DNC is basically an abortion. And you're not going to get this 12-week-old, perfectly formed little baby fits in the palm of your hands, not going to come out in one piece, to be quite frank. That's why she was willing to do this. And so 3 days later, this is from the article, I got into a different hospital. The drug to induce my labor was the abortion pill. When my husband picked it up from the pharmacy, he asked, "Is this for an abortion?" It was literally the hardest pill I'd ever had to swallow. But my sister calmed my nerves as I called her crying from the bathroom. And my husband was with me through it all. My heart swallowed that pill too, but I wasn't alone. After waiting 24 hours, I was given a second dose. A few hours later, labor started. This was not my first child, or even my first miscarriage, but it was the first time my body would have to labor so hard for nothing. But then, it wasn't nothing, was it? I fought to deliver my child, and here I was, supported and held up. So I worked. It wasn't very long. The waves that came were familiar to me. I danced through my contractions with my baby, just as I had with his siblings. Two bodies on the same mission. His soul was speaking to me. I wasn't alone. And so he came. We cried and we laughed, discovered our baby was a boy, took photos, tried to kiss his paper-thin skin. More than anything, I wanted to snuggle him close and squeeze my baby. You know, when you bring in a newborn and sniff their head? But he was far too fragile and delicate for that. So we held him in the palm of our hands. You can see the picture on the webpage that I shared the link for. So we held him in the palm of our hands and told him how much we loved him. The doctors and nurses were kind and so respectful. There was a reverence in the room that was palpable. All for our little boy. His soul had left 6 weeks before, but we saw him, acknowledged him, loved him. He wasn't alone either, and neither are you. We could count each finger as his hands lay across his chest. At 12 weeks, they truly are a perfectly formed human. Only physical difference from us is their vulnerability. In loving memory of John Mercy, who died at 12 weeks gestation. In his mother's womb, she went through all of that to deliver her baby, she and her husband, so they could hold that baby boy in the palm of their hands. And this is why I share stuff like this. I talk about it regularly. It's the greatest injustice in American history, without a doubt. I'm not minimizing slavery. I'm not minimizing the equal rights fight and everything else. I'm not minimizing any of that. But there's no question that the murder of 60 million of these little John Mercies, boys and girls, legally sanctioned by the government itself, supported by one half of the political realm, and also by our tax dollars via Planned Parenthood, the disgusting reality of that trickles through so many different aspects of American society. And so with the platform I've been given and the breath that I have and the truth that's readily available, we'll bring it up regularly. But I hope you'll go look at it. I hope you go look at these pictures for yourself, especially if you maybe are still in the camp of thinking abortion's okay. And you think that's just a blob of cells. It's not really a person. Can't sustain itself. Which, by the way, neither can a one-year-old. Outside of the womb. Go look at that. It's also why I think you should see Gosnell. And go see that, too. Speaking of movies, so everybody was, and I'm going to do this most Fridays if I can, do a movie review. So, especially when it gins up a bunch of attention and it gets our patriotic juices flowing, in this case, in the negative direction, because when it first came out that First Man was not going to feature the planting of the American flag, they actually said it didn't include it. And so everybody, you know, we went ballistic. And just like the NFL thing and the kneeling thing and all that stuff. And people go ballistic. And those things make me uncomfortable, but they don't make me as uncomfortable as they used to. Because one time with Call to Action before radio, when we were just doing activism stuff, political activism mostly, we spent a year and a half bludgeoning the North Carolina legislature in order to get the Pledge of Allegiance bill passed by both the House and the Senate and signed by the governor, forcing every public school in the state of North Carolina to offer the Pledge of Allegiance 5 days a week, kindergarten through 12th grade. I was so committed to that. And we were as an organization, and people were. They were so committed to that and fired up about that. I almost never see that kind of zeal from your average Christian for the lost, for evangelism, for the gospel. Would you labor like that a year and a half, do all the things that we did in order to see one person be saved? Most of us, no. And even on the issue of life. So when it comes to this movie, First Man, and everybody's going ballistic about the flag, I don't go as ballistic about it as I used to. I love this country. If you listen to this show more than once, you'll figure that out. Am I a patriot? Yes, I love this country. But I'm not as I'm a little more balanced about it than I used to be. I used to be totally consumed with all things American. And I love the country, and I fight for the truth, and I stay engaged with politics and talk about it regularly. But that was the whole thing, to watch people going ballistic because of the flag thing, which I understand. But then you don't even know for sure. You just hear an article, you see it, you share it, you see it on Facebook or whatever. You hear it on talk radio, and all of a sudden you just throw it to the ash heap of history, right? Oh, this is terrible. Might as well be a bunch of communists. Ryan Gosling said something stupid. He plays Neil Armstrong in the movie, and he's like, well, we didn't want this to be all about an American achievement, but a human achievement, blah, 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 the left stuff. Okay, whatever. But I tell you what, you go see the movie, that's not the way it comes across. And you do see the American flag planted on the moon. They don't show the planting, but it's prominently displayed as Neil Armstrong is experiencing what most of us could only ever imagine. But it was really about this 8-year process, 8 years, trials and tragedy and death and the unknown. And I kept thinking of the Tower of Babel. I kept thinking when God comes down with the angel of the Lord, which is probably a pre-incarnate Jesus. And basically, I'm paraphrasing it. There's nothing these people can't do when they put their mind to it as they were trying to build that temple to get them up to heaven. And so that's when God disturbs the language, right? And we get languages all over the place. But that's what I was thinking. Isn't it amazing, the audacity of the human spirit? And you see that, and sacrifice. And you see sacrifice at home, which I know a little bit something about as an activist and a guy that ran down a bunch of different roads. And my wife, Gina's at home homeschooling our kids, and I'm out. We joke about it now, call it my Hollywood lifestyle. I'm out running around. I'm on the news, blah, 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 and getting all the spotlight. And my wife's back at home doing the hard work. And that's exactly what happened with Neil Armstrong. So it was really a story. I thought it was moving and sobering to watch this guy. And I didn't know this. They lost their 2-year-old daughter to a brain tumor. And how he couldn't process that. Wouldn't talk about it. Stupid bug flying around my face. Couldn't process it. So you see that brokenness, and that affected their marriage. Although they stayed married. I don't know if they did long after the moonshot. But the difficulty there, which should touch your heart. Maybe you have a struggling marriage yourself, or you deal with something like that yourself. Your spouse is off running around doing things and working and traveling a lot, and you're left at home or whatever. Vice versa, could be the husband or the wife. And so that part of the movie, I appreciate it. But really, the sacrifice, the determination, the courage, 8 years, you know, a bunch of people died. That's when I didn't know this. This was fascinating. When they asked him, when he came back from orbiting the Earth, and they sent him to the White House. When he's at the party this is historically accurate. When he's at the party at the White House is when the other three astronauts, Gus Grissom, Roger Chaffee, and Ed White, who were probably his best friends, were killed. That's when the whole cabin burned up. The oxygen caught fire, and they all burned up inside the capsule. That happened while Neil Armstrong was at the White House. So he's seeing some of his best friends and his daughter die, which was obviously breaking the guy. But yet he kept going. He just had this determination to get to the moon. So 8 years, trial and tragedy. In the movie, just in case you're thinking about taking kids, there's not a whole lot of bad stuff in there. I mean, relative to what we think now. There's 2 F words, 4 S words. S as in Steve, but that's not the word. Along with a handful of, D-A-M-N and hell. Jesus' name they abused 3 times. And so you got that. You have to consider that. But setting that aside, I thought it was a really solid movie. It made me appreciate the determination of the American people. It made me appreciate the determination of individuals and their courage to explore and to sacrifice themselves, potentially, and then the price that their families paid. And Neil Armstrong, you know, the thing I really appreciated it, most of these movies, you know, the great stuff, these guys are like cowboys and they're totally studs and they're just facing everything. There's no problem. They're like, rah, yeah, awesome. No, this wasn't like that. He was a pretty, and this is all based on biography, so they really tried to stay historically accurate. He struggled a lot with grief and acceptance, trying to achieve this goal. And so that human side of it, I thought was touching and interesting and impactful. So I would definitely say, go see it. Let's go, Steve. You don't care about the American flag. Yes, I do. But I care about human beings more than I care about the American flag. There, I said it. Are you all right? You going to get over that? It's going to be fine. And yes, the American flag, there it is, proudly displayed on his uniform. It's all over the place. It's a uniquely American story, of course, because America is a uniquely gifted place. American exceptionalism, of course. They wouldn't have been on the moon if that were not true. But you see the flag on the moon. You see it on the lunar lander. You see it all over the place. It's a uniquely American story. I would say overall, I'd give it a B+. I thought it was worth the time. So there you go. I'm going to try to do some movie reviews on Fridays just to add a little other interesting element to the show. But I appreciate you guys being here. Have an awesome weekend. Make sure you spend time with your families and love them and hold them. And God willing, I'll talk to you again real soon. And like my dad always said, ever forward.